Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Business's Art on True Chat. We're broadcasting from Urbana, Ohio today. I'm your host, John Umstead, and you can reach out to me, if you would please, on Twitter, at John Umstead, that's J-O-N-U-M-S-T-E-A-D, or on LinkedIn. You can also find me on Facebook at John Umstead MBA, and any number of other ways. Go out to my website, plancanvas.net, or go to the True Chat website. Find me there. But I'd love for you to reach out, start a dialogue with me. I'd love to hear what you think of today's episode and other episodes of Business's Art. Love to hear what you want us to talk about on this show, what kind of guests we might bring in, and just get your feedback. So reach out and let's start talking. So with me today, my co-host today, also the producer of the show and founder of True Chat Network, well, co-founder of True Chat Network, is Mr. Camden Pierce. Camden, welcome back to the show.
Oh, don't give me all the credit. Justin listens to some of these. How are you?
Well, yeah. So we've got to continue to feed his ego. So let's just call you the minor co-founder.
Oh, there we go. All right. Keep going lower. By the end of the show, I'll have nothing to do with True Chat, and it'll be a good time.
That's right. By the end of the show, Justin is totally the man.
There you go. Oh, man.
If he is listening, he's tuning out right now.
There it is. We've just lost one listener, sadly.
That's right. The show's already gone off the rails. We haven't even gotten through the opening credits here. Well, hey, Camden, we are going to continue a conversation that we started a couple of weeks ago on the last recorded episode of Business is Art, where we talked about Business is Art on Business is Art. So Business is Art, the book. We're going to be talking about certain parts of that book on Business is Art, the podcast. So last time we talked about just some general concepts that were presented in the book, and we really never made it out of chapter one. So today we're going to take a little bit of a stretch here and talk about a couple of chapters for anybody that has the book or intends to get the book. We're going to be talking about some of the highlights that are in chapters 3 and 4. And the main reason we wanted to do this was because it seemed like over and over again on the show, somebody will mention something and I'll say, hey, you know, we talk about that in the book, or I'm in conversations with somebody, same thing. And these things come up just over and over again. So I thought it might be a good time, since our listenership has been on the fairly steep climb lately, to just kind of recap a few of those things that we really haven't talked about in quite a while on the show. So that's what we're doing today. And the last time, Camden, we really kind of talked process, you know, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. And today, if we can, I'd like to really speak a little bit more anecdotally. So how's that sound to you?
Hey, sounds great.
Trips all your triggers in all the right ways.
There you go. Flips all my switches, whatever way we want to, say it.
All right. Well, good deal. So we're going to talk about strategic planning and strategic management. Those are the two chapters. There are two different things. And Camden, as always, just jump in anytime here. But I want to talk a little bit about the differences of them before we really kick into high gear here. So first off, strategic planning is really just that. You're thinking about those long-term things that you want to do, not just that you want to accomplish in your business, but where you want to get to, how you're going to get there. And that's really the planning process. Strategic management then is really that execution to whatever that plan is. So you're modifying the plan, you're tracking your results against it, you are really managing the plan. And I know that I just used basically the same I just define strategic planning with the words planning and strategy, and strategic management with the words strategy and management. So anyway, maybe that's because I just see it as a pretty simple distinction. So I don't know, Camden, let me throw it to you and see if you kind of get the distinction, or if you can explain it in a way that someone else might readily grasp.
Yeah, I mean, planning is the football play. Management is Tom Brady throwing the touchdown to Gronk. That's the easiest way I think of it. Is you gotta draw it up, which is the planning, and then you gotta actually get out there and do it and have the pieces in place to run the play.
Yeah.
And I don't think I used strategic planning or management once in my anecdote there. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. So I'll just take a couple of quotes out of the book because I really like to think of strategic planning simply as identifying the things you need to do to reach your vision. And there are all kinds of big complicated definitions of strategic planning out there, and they put me to sleep pretty quickly. So I just like to boil it down in those types of simple terms. It's really that discipline to look before you leap, right? And strategic planning, excuse me, strategic management is really the management of that said leap, right? So, whew, I've already done a lot of yakking and haven't given you a whole lot of opportunity to talk. So, why don't I take a breath and see what you might have to say before we move on, or if maybe you can move us on.
Right. Well, I mean, when you get into that that planning step, I mean, you kind of you have to make the plan first before you get into the strategic management phase. And I think that's kind of all of what chapter three is kind of about there. What I've always wondered, John, I guess, as I was rereading Business is Art, which, by the way, I know John always likes to point out the shameless self plugs, but I'm about to give, shameless plug that I make no money for if you buy the book. This book is probably one of the easiest business books to read because I think John Umstead doesn't actually like to write business books. Don't tell him that though, because he likes to write. If he could write a dad joke book and it would
Yeah,
sell, he'd write it. Because I
that's right.
think that is what Business is Art is, hidden under the
It's
guise of a business book.
one long dad joke
It is
book.
one long dad joke because it kills me. Because I'm reading the book, and you make it's it, it. You mentioned in chapter three how you hate the KISS method, or it was either chapter three or chapter four where you hate the KISS method unless they're talking about the band, and then you make the joke of that you want to rock and roll all night long and party every day. And I'm just like that. I have to stop reading the book and laugh about it for a second because I'm like, man, that is just hilarious. But I guess, I don't think that moved us anywhere. But
No.
it moved my mind into saying that story, which I enjoyed
Well,
while reading
it
the
moved my
chapters.
heart. It moved my heart. I appreciate that
Ah,
very much.
excellent.
Yeah, that was very intentional when I sat down to write this book. You hit it right on the head. I really didn't want to write a business book. I for years had been thinking I need to, and for years had been telling myself I don't want to. Because I've read so many business books, and so many of them are very, very dry and boring. And they do eventually come around to some points here and there, but boy, they sure drive you to boredom in the process. And I really didn't want to do that. So it was very intentional that I tried to make it a little bit entertaining, and probably I have a natural tendency towards slapstick and dad jokes, so there's a little bit of little bit of that in there, so or a lot depending on how you look at
I'd go, it's a good happy medium, John. Good happy medium.
it. Yeah. Well, a purist would read it and say this guy's a clown.
Right.
He can't take this stuff seriously. Why should I read his? But I think the majority of people don't really care what the purist has to say.
Right, exactly. Not real people anyway. And you purists out there, I'm sorry, but you're not real to me, or at least you don't have a realistic mindset on how the world works.
That's right. Relax a little
Yeah,
bit.
you
Just
have to
relax.
have some some moment of levity while you try to conquer the world. So
Yes. Yes.
Pinky the Brain
Speaking.
wouldn't be very funny if Brain just tried to take over the world super seriously the whole time without, Pinky screwing it all up.
Well, sure. Exactly. So, speaking of levity, let me lay some on you right here. And when I say that, what I mean is nothing funny about what I'm about to say at all. So this
There you
is some
go.
of that boring stuff. So going back to kind of the distinction between strategic planning and strategic management, I think it is important to note that there are kind of two sides, or well, two sides to each of those. Strategic planning really has a couple of phases. Strategic management really has a couple of phases. And there are a number of theories and methodologies out there, but they all kind of boil down to this, that the first two phases that represent strategic planning. Well, they include the analysis or assessment phase. So you're really just taking a look at what it is that you've got and what it is that you're trying to do. The foundation or this formulation phase, rather, is more about developing that strategy and documenting it, putting it into some sort of consumable format that others can read, critique, contribute to, understand, etc. So those two things, analysis and strategy formulation, are really phases one and two of strategic planning and management, and specifically they fall on the strategic planning side of the house. So over on the strategic management side, you've got a couple of more phases. So one of them is strategic execution. And that's where you're really translating that high-level plan into more operational planning and making it actionable. So that's execution phase. And then finally, the fourth phase is just reevaluating and sustaining and managing. You know, you just, it's basically that rinse and repeat cycle where you are just watching what you're doing. You're making adjustments as you go, and you keep moving forward. So those are kind of the four phases of, if you look at strategic planning and management overall, those are kind of the four phases. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. And I'm assuming if you had the opportunity, you'd do, how would you change number one, like the analysis and assessment phase? Like, because if say you're going into a business consulting gig with like people who don't have a business yet.
Right.
Like, I'm assuming you still want them to do one and two before even hopping in, or... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be how that would work?
Yeah, it would be. In fact, most businesses never get past that phase one. They're just thinking about stuff. That, mm-hmm. You could really think of that phase one as, I'm thinking about some things. You know, you have a plan. Yeah, it's in my head, but I've got one. Or you sit around and shoot the shit and talk about it. You know, that's really analysis and assessment. And so many businesses never really get out of that when it comes to being strategic. They just start doing. So you think about it and then you do. And there's nothing in between, just a leap from one to the other. So, yeah, it really does start with that.
Okay.
And then that second phase, that's when you really start thinking about, okay, now that I know what I want to do, how am I going to do it? So you really start thinking about those next steps as opposed to just jumping right in.
Right. Phase two where you're starting to write stuff down then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And to that point, and this is something that I talk about in chapter three, writing things down. Really is very powerful. It almost becomes magical. And in the book, I even say, maybe it is magic. You know, I'm going to quote from the book here. So when you write things down, you're saying to the universe, this is what I want. Won't you help me get there? And the universe responds in kind. And maybe in writing it down, it becomes more real to you and others. And you start to think, okay, well, this isn't just an idea anymore. I've written it down. So now I have to do it. And so you get more motivated. So that's kind of the way I think of it. You get it out of your head, you write it down, and now it becomes real.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly how, to speak of TrueChat, which is obviously the example I know the most about, it was we were obviously very young. Not that that should stop you from using the Business's Art phenomenal strategic planning plan, but we did not do that. We just kind of had, you know, we had talked about it for about 6 months. Hey, we kind of want to do this thing. And then one day we finally decided, well, God, let's quit talking and do it. And 12 hours later, we were doing a podcast calling each other via cell phone. So it was just, hey, it's at some point we have to do one of these things and quit, you know, futzing around and waiting until we have the opportunity. You know, we're 15, we're young, we got time to kill. Let's do this thing. And then you just do it. You have to, and that's scary though. Even when we were kids, and you know, 15's obviously not, you know, young kid or anything. But it's like, yeah, but if we do this, do we make fools of ourselves? Do we look like idiots? I mean, like right. it's tough to even write a strategic plan of, okay, so how am I going to sell these sandwiches at my sandwich shop that's even scary too, because then it's okay, now I'm making this very real. I have to admit certain things, like, hey, maybe this isn't working to myself, or and things like that. And that's where it starts to get really scary. So it sounds very simple of, oh, hey, you just got to write it down. Like that's easy. You learn that in first and kindergarten, really, preschool stuff, learning how to write. I just got to write it down. But it is truly hard for, you know, and sometimes when things are going bad, definitely very hard. Or even when, you know, hey, do I have a way to articulate my business on paper in a professional way? Or do I just have my 30-second elevator pitch and that's all I got when you walk into my sandwich shop? So there's a lot of admitting to yourself. And that's what I noticed the most when we went through this as a company.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, every once in a while I'll throw the reality show Shark Tank out on businesses are, and you know, and we have to do so with a little bit of caution, because there's a lot to that show that is really meant for entertainment factor and to get viewers in there. Mm-hmm. But there's also some really good lessons to learn if you're really watching that show, which I like to watch it. I get a little bit of a kick out of it. But you know, you really ought to, whether you ever intend to audition for Shark Tank, or whether you ever intend to pitch to investors or not, you should prepare yourself for that. You know, and kind of think of Shark Tank as worst case scenario, where they're going to be jerks, they're going to belittle you, you know, they are going to challenge you, and they're going to try to look smart, you know, for entertainment purposes and to feed their egos because they're on camera, right? So that's kind of your worst case scenario, and you should prepare for it. And you can watch that show all the time, and somebody comes in and it's just like you said, they've got a great little pitch, you know, 30-second pitch, maybe a 2-minute pitch, got a great one, really get the sharks excited and interested. And then they ask them just a couple of really basic questions, and it's stutter time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got nothing to say that makes any sense. And how many times have, you know, contestants on that show walked out without a deal because, you know, a shark will say, you had me at the beginning, and then the more you talk, the more confused I became, and so I'm out.
Mm-hmm. The house of cards starts to fall in on them, and that's the stuff you just have to know, especially when talking with investors. Like the big one, the killer on Shark Tank, because we actually, you know, not that I'm claiming that that's the best educational tool or anything, but I've seen many episodes, many reruns of it, just because we used to watch it in business class when we were, you know, out of stuff to do. It was one of the activities we could do if we got done with, you know, whatever we were doing early in the day, is just pop on an episode of Shark Tank and watch it and see how people would give business pitches on there. And the number one killer is obviously is always like, well, when I look at your, you know, what's your expense sheet looking like compared to your, you know, like your P&L kind of deal, but it's more of like, okay, where do you see that moving? And it just kills people. It's just like, I don't really have a goal for that. I'm just kind of doing really well on my own here, and I'm just thinking about keeping it going. It's just like, nope.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they don't want to hear, because it's like, okay, so you just lucked into this thing then, huh? So yeah, it is not worth it to me at all, because you don't have a plan, therefore we don't have a plan.
Yeah, and one of the mistakes that people make is trying to do one or the other. You're talking to, you know, high up in the clouds, you know, you're and bringing it down maybe a couple of levels with your strategy and your vision and all of that kind of stuff. Or they focus solely on that down in the dirt stuff, you know, the financial models and that kind of thing. And you really have to have both. You have to be able to speak to both equally well. You know what I mean? There's that dirt and grind, and then there's the high level feeling good, and I know where I'm taking this business.
Yeah, it's that's tough to have a two-track mind like that, and to be able to switch. Truly, I know this doesn't have anything to do with the book. It's just something I've noticed and something that I like. I've always noticed that, like, if there's two people there, it's definitely, and you've also got someone in your corner for what it's worth while you're also talking to the sharks, which probably makes it easier since you're sitting in front of multi-billionaires who own companies that could buy yours out tomorrow and feel nothing. But right. That's what I've always noticed, is it's tough to do that on a one-track mind, but if you got somebody focusing on the, well, this is what we want to be and this is how we want to help the community, and sort of the more you know, not out there, but more in the clouds type thinking, as you were talking about. And another guy like, okay, so here's what we're making now. Here's the loans we got. What's our overall worth when it comes to equipment and things like that? And you got, you know, two partners that are working on it that way, because it's tough. It's a lot. It's two very different ways to think about your money and your business, which is why there's a lot of, you know, that division to that type of thinking.
Well, you know, you make a fantastic point that there are multiple hats that you have to wear. And if you can find a partner that can be that complement to whatever skills you're bringing to the table, you're putting yourself in a much better position, because it is two different skill sets, and not a lot of people can walk both sides of the fence real effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both necessary. Actually, tomorrow, so today is Tuesday, February 27th. Tomorrow, Tuesday or Wednesday, February 28th, I'm delivering a free webinar at noon Eastern Time through an organization called 4Gen Now. And it's a nonprofit. I've actually had Jim Sugarman, who founded 4Gen Now, on the Business to Start podcast a few episodes back. But, you know, his whole mission is not just to bring those kind of complementary skill sets together, but actually to bring them together across multiple generations. And he really highly encourages a founder of a startup to partner up with somebody that's either 20 years older or 20 years younger. So he takes it even further than those skill sets and says, hey, you know, you've got to have that differential in the generational gap there as well.
Right. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms to open there to see, you know, the technological side of things. Where does that generation, through this person's eyes, how do they see it versus how does the millennial see it? Or, I mean, I don't know if this is part of their program, but I mean, how does the baby boomers see it versus the Gen Xer, or even that far away, where we don't have the, yeah, I grew up with a cell phone and a computer and I know how this works. We go even farther, and then Gen Xers who now are learned it, you know, in their late teens, early 20s. So
right.
I like it. I remember producing that show and liking that one a lot, because I find it to be a very interesting and good plan. Is, you know, we do it on our State of Us show, where we've got a former teacher of ours, Lance Jackson, on there, and, you know, me and Justin, where we're young guys and he's an older guy, he's seen a few things, plus, you know, has even older knowledge as a history teacher. So I cannot say that I hate that idea, because I think it's a good one.
Yeah. I think so too. Well, hey, let's get back to the book here a little bit here. So in chapter 3, I throw out a few myths about strategic planning. I don't know if there's so much myths or just misconceptions, and I'm not going to dwell on all five of them here, but one of them I did want to hit on, because it really is, kind of goes to a lot of what you said about my writing style as well. I really do not like big, lengthy strategic plans. And in the book, so I list that as myth number 3, a strategic plan is only good if it's several pages long. You know, nothing could be further from the truth. You can have a one-page strategic plan and it'd be, you know, pretty hot stuff. So don't feel like you've got to write a big, long book. And that's kind of what we learn. We learn it in school, or we learn it at big companies, or you know, some of those other boring books that we read. We learn this stuff that we've got to, because it's kind of institutionalized. We've got to write these big monolithic things. And so in the book, I talk about an experience that I had. I was working at an insurance company, and I was working for the chief information officer. And he was a big thinker. He really was. He really was visionary. He did everything big. So the strategy that we were putting together by his direction had to be big as well. And he had a $150 million information technology department that he was writing this, or wanted this strategy written for. So, you know, it was a big organization, and he was a big thinker. And he gave us directives to write a big strategy. So what we ended up with was, oh gosh, I can't remember. There's a dozen or more 3-inch binders, just full of stuff. Cost, you know, it probably, if we did it today, it would be, a few hundred thousand dollars to put it all together. And he had a big 10-minute video put together, to talk about it, and spared no expense on that. Really professionally done video and all this stuff. We did all of this stuff. Took months, months and months. And then, once he kind of got his kudos for, oh my gosh, you've got this wonderful strategy. What a leader you are. You are so visionary. Nothing happened. It was too big, too unwieldy, wasn't actionable. It just looked pretty and it fed his ego. And that is exactly the wrong, those are exactly the wrong reasons to write a strategic plan. You're putting a strategy together so you can carry it out. It's got to be actionable.
I love the word several too. I was going to say it when you were back on it, but it doesn't convey too few. Like it would be a few pages long, I think, would be like to diminish it, but several. I really do like that word. It's a very nice choice of a word. But man, I mean, who's even supposed to read that? Because God knows if he wasn't in there in your office every step of the way and not running his company, he never read all that. Like
Right.
that's just it's it truly is just a little ridiculous. Plus, you're wasting all that shelf space.
Well, it does look good on the shelf.
Well, that is now there you go, John Umstead. I tell you what, John Umstead, interior designer, says, man, those binders over there collecting dust look sweet.
They look very sweet if they're well done.
That is true. That is very true.
But yeah, I probably literally am the only one that read nearly every word in those binders because I was leading the effort to get it all put together. And what the hell am I going to do about it, right? After
Right, you're not running the company, so what do you care? You're just making sure it sounds good.
That's right. Sounds great.
Yeah,
Oh,
it's
man.
I tell you might as well just put pages and pages of song lyrics there in about binder 13, and he'll never know. It just looks like it's a thing.
Yeah. Well, hey, I have one more thought that I'd like to kind of close out the chapter three strategy, strategic planning stuff with. But before I skip kind of to the end of the chapter, is there anything else in between that you would like to highlight? And it's fine if you don't.
No, I think we're good.
Okay. So the last thing I'd kind of like to leave folks with is that if you don't have a strategic plan, put one together. It's different than the business plan. The business plan is getting down into the tactical things you're going to do and how you're going to manage the business. But the strategy is designed to kind of close the gap over the long haul between today's reality and your vision. So it's a longer term thing. It doesn't get down into some of the tactical details that a business plan does. So in that vein, it's much simpler to write. It's a shorter document by far than the more tactical business plan. So, especially if you're a startup or you're a young company, put together a strategic plan. You may not need to go through all of the steps of the more tactical business plan, but put together a strategic plan because at least it gets you thinking big picture. How about that?
How about that? Now, chapter four will tell you that now you have to be ready for it all to fall apart all around
Yeah, you do. You do. And let's hold that thought
Yep.
and just take one really quick break here. I want to remind our listeners that new episodes of Business is Art are available by 4, or excuse me, 6 p.m. in the Eastern time zone on Tuesdays. That's new episodes of Business is Art. Of course, it's always on demand, anytime, anywhere that you've got the TrueChat app or a connection to the internet, to the TrueChat website, or to iTunes. You can find Businesses Art out there as well. Let's talk about TrueChat's mission statement here real quick. TrueChat will be the mortal enemy of speculation, innuendo, and stagnation. We'll champion informed opinions and fresh ideas. TrueChat will prove that media can be trusted, relied on, and responsible. We won't join the media elite. Heck no, because we're setting a new standard, higher standard. It's the TrueChat standard. Now, to ensure that this show maintains the highest ethical standards, we make it easy for you to voice any concerns with today's episode by emailing ethics@truechat.org. Again, that's ethics@truechat.org. So let's get back to the topic at hand. We're talking about Business is Art, the book on Business is Art. Specifically, we're kind of covering chapters 3 and 4, where we're talking about strategic planning and strategic management. So, to your point, Camden, Now's the time where you start getting prepared to fall on your face, right?
Yes, it's I think you open this chapter with honestly one of my favorite quotes. I actually didn't never knew who said it at this point, but that no battle plan ever survives contact with the enemy. I love that quote. It's a good one and very true.
Yeah, it is very true. And Mike Tyson has a similar quote, saying that everyone has a plan till they get punched in the mouth, right? Similar lyric in the newish U2 song that's on the airwaves right now, "Get Out of Your Own Way." There's a line in there. She had a plan until she got smacked in the mouth and it all went south. So, a little violent, but.
Hey, but so is life and so is the business world at times. So
It can be. It can feel that way,
feel that
anyways.
way, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've got to be prepared to change and move. Now, just because you might take that punch, doesn't mean you shouldn't have a plan, right? Because what does a plan do? It may help you avoid the punch in the first place, but if the punch lands, it may help you absorb that punch a little bit better than you had if you didn't have a plan. And that can then buy you time to get back, get to the end of the round, get back over to the corner, have your trainer fix you up, and get you all prepped for the next round and rethink about how you're going to approach that next round. So those are the kinds of things that a plan can do. One of my pet peeves, Camden, is hearing people say it's going to change immediately, so why bother? I'm not going to bother doing it. And
Right. It'd be like it'd be like going hiking without any sort of semblance of a map or things like that. It's just like it's not a logical way. It's not a logical way to go about life where it's like, well, everything is just, random chance and the universe, decides things for me. So I guess I just won't plan and I won't, try and make goals to make myself or my business or, my family life or my personal relationships any better because it's just going to go downhill if it's going to go downhill. And it's just that's it's not logical at all.
Yeah, you're right. So one of the things I do talk about in this chapter is, part of your strategic plan should be what kind of internal initiatives you want to undertake. So these are things that go beyond, over and above your day-to-day business activities, but these are things that are going to enable you to reach your strategic objectives and strategic goals and your vision, like I said, that go beyond day-to-day business activities. So they're going to require you to invest some time or invest some money. So they're resource heavy and constrained, and we call these strategic initiatives. So you want to identify a few things. And a really simple example, Camden, is actually you can think of what TrueChat just did. TrueChat just refreshed the website. Got a new look and feel to the website. Got a new look and feel to the TrueChat app. Right? That is a perfect example of a strategic initiative. Right? It's an internal project that you're going to do that better enables your business and business outcomes.
Well, I tell you what, John, you are that was phenomenal. I was going to throw that in the mid-show reads, but you just knew. That was a soul read from you right there.
Oh, wow. Hey,
Yeah,
there
I
you
like
go.
it. But it comes from the plan of TrueChat to we want to modernize and make it easier for our customers and audience to reach our content. So therefore, we go down to the strategic initiative point of it, where it's like, okay, we want to make our website look as modern and as easy to use functionality wise, and have our app connect to our website rather than our app connect to a third party, which then connects to our website, which is how we used to do it. I know that's a little in the weeds for an overall example, but how we do that's kind of the climb or the ladder, if you will, that we took. So we made the plan first, then had the strategic initiative to change up the website and the app and make them more fresh and clean.
Yeah. So it's a perfect and timely example of a strategic initiative. And with those strategic initiatives, because they cost time and money, you don't want to have too many of them going on at the same time, for one. But for two, you also want to make sure you know how you're going to manage those strategic initiatives. So they're projects. You know, it's managing a project, and there are all kinds of project management methodologies out there. I did not intend for Business as Art to be one of those, nor is it. But I do reference a couple of things. One of the things I reference with respect to project management is what's commonly referred to as PMBOK. And PMP certification, project management professional certifications based on PMBOK, which is project management body of knowledge. And especially out in the information technology software development world, that's a pretty well known stuff. But the point I was really trying to make in the book is that most of the time you don't need that. I mean, it gets really very detailed. It's probably another one of my pet peeves when I run across a PMP certified person that goes pretty power nerd on me pretty fast. And you know, you can really easily get into process for the sake of process. And if it's not process that's adding value, don't do it. You know, it should be kind of your mantra. But it does give you some overall kind of good ideas. So I'm not saying don't go out and look at it. If you are building a spaceship, you might want to follow it pretty closely. But you know,
An
if you're
IKEA
building,
couch, on the other hand, we can, we might need to leave. If a screw got lost in the mail from China to here, then we might be good with
exactly. So just use a little common sense.
it.
Maybe that's easier said than done. If you don't know, ask me. Send me an
Oh,
email,
there you go.
tweet to me, whatever, and I'll tell you what's what. I'll at least give you an opinion,
Yeah, hey, that's all they can really ask for. It's a nice, solid John Umstead opinion.
That's right. But hey, you know, on these initiatives, they are projects, and you want to apply some kind of project planning or management techniques to them. The basic components of a project plan is somebody has to own it. Each project better have some goals and objectives. You know, what is it that you want to get out of it? If there isn't anything you can identify, then that's a pretty good litmus test, right? Don't do it. If you're just doing it to be cool, that's not a good reason. There should be business goals and objectives tied to it. Unless your business goal is to be cool, which it might be, maybe. You want to have a schedule, start date and end date, and you want to assign resources to it. You want to have some kind of risk mitigation plan because bumps are going to occur. You're going to hit roadblocks. So when those risks occur, first of all, what are you going to do? It's kind of like that punch in the mouth thing, right? What are you going to do to avoid the risk in the first place? But if it hits, what are you going to do to mitigate against it? In other words, how are you going to diminish any of the negative impacts that it might have? You want to communicate the plan to whomever the stakeholders are. You don't want to just surprise them with, hey, we just completely changed the business model on you, or something like that. So you want to communicate what it is that you're doing when you're doing it. And this is important. You want to determine some kind of reward structure. Because again, most companies don't have the resources to hire staff to just work on these initiatives, right? A lot of times, these are people that have a day job at this company and are doing something extra. So that their overall day-to-day responsibilities don't go away, but they've got these additional responsibilities on top of. So make sure you're putting in some sort of reward structure for those that are involved in whatever the initiative or project is, and then determine how you're going to celebrate its successful conclusion. Determine that ahead of time so that everybody knows, and hopefully you can expand that to everybody in the organization, not just the people that were responsible for implementing whatever change you just were implementing through that initiative. So those are just some words of advice on project planning and what you should do. Hey, any thoughts on that?
Hey, don't be afraid to reward yourself either. Owning your own business is too stressful to not reward you as well. But I mean, it's that it truly is everything you need there in a risk management or a I would suppose initiative plan for sure. That was one of the things at TrueChat that we really started doing, and I noticed that our workflow went through the roof, is giving everything an owner, giving projects an owner, where it's just like, oh, before it was, well, Justin or Cam will get this done when they're not doing 5 million shows or making, you know, sales calls to people in, you know, Zimbabwe or wherever. We'll get this done at some point. Someone will get it done. But then at when you put an end date, when you put a due date on things, it's why your teachers did it. It's why, you know, ever since the dawn of time, it's like, hey, I need this by now so that I can get it graded by then and we can get grades in before the 9 weeks. And it's, you know, life mirrors itself in that way, where it's just time continues to move, but everything else is like a reflecting pool, where if it works once, it'll probably work again. So that was the biggest thing that helped us, was ownership of tasks. Huge. Mm-hmm. Monumental. I never expected that to help as much as it did.
Oh, yeah, because it's just too easy to sit around and you all decide something needs to be done. Crystal clear, this got to be done. And then everyone walks away thinking someone else is going to be responsible for getting it done. And so it never gets done. Or it gets done late, or it gets done, you know, only because, you know, of Herculean last-minute efforts. That clarity of role, clarity of assignment, clarity of tasks is absolutely critical to getting anything done, particularly when you're talking about projects.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, I've got kind of one other point that I wanted to just make on this chapter. So before I do that, let me ask if you have any additional that you would like to.
No, I don't believe so. Not for this chapter.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to kind of close this chapter I'm actually going to read a paragraph out of, it's towards the end of chapter 4 on strategic management. And the section is entitled Avoid the Big Lie. Whatever you do with respect to strategic management of your business, your employees, and your customers, avoid the big lie of insincerity. Saying things just because you think they're what someone wants to hear or to avoid looking bad is tactical management, not strategic management, and it cannot be sustained over the long haul. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. This one is huge. I saw this and I'm like, oh, I hope he talks about this, because this is the biggest thing ever. And it has nothing to do with business knowledge. It's something that I truly believe this. And, you know, I'm not a biologist or a psychologist or whoever ologist is specialized in talking about this. This is just something that people can read. They can read when you're being insincere to them. And even before I got into the, you know, what would be considered the big business cushy office in downtown Cincinnati and stuff, and really got into that world. And I don't want to bash, you know, all corporate stuff, because I met some of the greatest people I've ever met in my life at that corporate job. But there were certain people where I could just tell when they're talking to me, it's like you're angling for something, or you want something from me, or you think you want me to share your, and it doesn't even have to really be it during a sales pitch. Like, this is just like people who are insincere in this way, are insincere when they want to talk about, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, or when they want to talk about, you know, it's always you're believing my side, and because this gives me X. And it's just like, I don't know. You just are not someone I want to associate with. And that, if you figure out that you're one of these people, and I had these tendencies as well, you know, being a guy who's debated his entire life and is like, well, I'm right about this because blank. And it's like, well, take a step back for a second and avoid, you know, going for throwing numbers against the wall and like, hey, maybe they'll believe this kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's, if you figure out you're one of these people that does these sort of things, it's tough to break, but it can be done. Trust me.
It can be done. It can be, and it should be done. You know, kind of the days of the slick back hair dude, mm-hmm. used car salesman. Yeah, it's long over. Nobody wants that anymore.
Oh yeah.
So you've got to find ways to be sincere, and find ways not just to be sincere, but to carry that sincerity in some sort of message that is going to resonate with your audience, so that they feel it as well. Because you can be very sincere and stand up and say stuff that people just don't hear, right?
Right.
You've got that's the trick. That's the real trick. Is how do you say it in a way that's meaningful to them while being sincere?
Well, it's easy. It's easy to get people to listen to you while you're being insincere. Well, this is the best product you've ever seen. Huge, big, like glowing right. lights. Hey, this you need to look at this because of X, Y, and Z. And if that's how your product actually is or your service actually is, and you can say those things, then great, then you've got them. But you know, if you're doing that and you're also fibbing or telling small little lies in between here and there, you don't want to do that either. It is tough to be, well, here's realistically what we've got going on. And it's like, well, okay, I've heard from Jim, Bob, and George down here that it's way better with them, even if it's really not. So mm-hmm. there is a middle ground there for sure, where you have to not use. It's the same thing we see in media these days, where it's like, wow, here's the big flashy headline that gets people interested. And then it's like, well, but maybe the actual article has something to do with that, but it's actually really about this. And that's just kind of just normal stuff going on right there. So it's tough for sure. Now, lots of people out there use the big flashy billboard tactic for sure.
Yeah. Yep. That is for sure. So, all right. Well, that's really kind of all I really wanted to cover between these two chapters, chapters 3 and 4, strategic planning and strategic management. So I hope folks found this helpful. And if not, reach out to me. Happy to answer any questions or go get the book. Come on. Hey, get up your...
You don't even have to, though. Right. You can just get it on Amazon. You're listening to this on your desktop or your phone or whatever device. You can right now look up Businesses Art, get that off, you know, Amazon That's Books. Right. I don't know where
it's
else
like
you can get
it. It's like 3 clicks away.
It is just 3 clicks, I tell you. That's not the big lie. That is the big truth.
That's right. Maybe type a little, but yeah.
Oh, crap. That's that's a little. That's more of a clack than a click, I'd say, depending on your keyboard.
But anyways, know the difference, strategic planning and strategic management. Know the difference between those two. The big thing is a lot of leaders don't know the difference between the two. And a lot of companies don't do it, period. I hate throwing stats around because, you know, they tend to be meaningless. Talk about sending a message out that resonates with people. But I don't know how to say it any better. If you do this stuff, especially if you're a startup, you are more than doubling your odds of succeeding, of surviving. If you already have a business that is surviving, you are increasing your odds by at least 33% if you do that. And hey, you know, if you could have $100 versus $300, how much are you going to take? I'm going to take the $300. So, you know, or $133, I guess, if I'm using the 33% example. I'm going to take $133 over $100 every day. Right. So why people don't do this, I don't know. But the vast, vast, vast majority of businesses don't.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely necessary. Knowing, planning and knowing what you want to do allows you to more effectively do the things you want to do. Truly is that simple.
Truly is that simple. All right. Well, hey, thanks for entertaining me here. And letting me do this. I do want to have one more episode of Businesses Art on Businesses Art and talk about another chapter or two. So we'll do that in a next up and coming episode. But for now, I think that's going to be a wrap for this one, Camden.
Sounds good, John. Hopefully I played co-host well in this one. A lot less general information and more fun stuff between me and you. The witty banter, if you will.
There you go. Indeed, I think you did, but my opinion does not matter.
I think your opinion matters a little bit, John.
Oh, maybe a little, but the opinion of the listeners is what truly matters.
There you go. Well, listeners, you let me know.
Yeah, if they start tweeting, Camden really made that show suck, then we're going to have to rethink the next one.
Then we're getting me out of here, I tell you what. I will be fired post-haste.
Alrighty, sir. Well, hey, let's wrap her up. So, listeners, if you haven't already, make sure you download TrueChat's mobile app. You can connect with us on social media right there in the app itself, or visit our website, truechat.org. That's TRUECHAT.org. Again, that's truechat.org. True Chat's network offers a great lineup of shows on sports and politics and entertainment, business, and more. So make sure you explore what our network has to offer. For Businesses Art on True Chat, broadcasting from Urbana, Ohio, I'm your host, John Umstead. With me today has been Camden Pierce. Say hello, Camden.
Hello, hello.
Or say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye, goodbye. Thank you for having me on, John.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you all very much for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Businesses Art. Be the change.